agenda is approval of minutes, and I move to approve the minutes from the regular Board of Education meeting. I'm sorry, we did not receive those. I take that back. Public appearances. There are no public appearances. We have a few announcements to make. The Madison Metropolitan School District was very proud to host a visit from President Barack Obama on November 4th, 2009 at J.C. Wright Middle School. Prior to delivering a speech before a loud crowd of visiting dignitaries, educators, parents, Wright staff and students, and the school board, President Obama talked with 40 Wright Middle School students in a private question and answer session. We would like to thank President Obama for choosing to share the first anniversary of his election to office with our students and community. Families with preschool and elementary age children are invited to provide input toward helping MMSD in the Madison community plan for the possibility of initiating a kindergarten program for four-year-old children. The survey should take only 5 to 7 minutes to complete and will provide the 4K Planning Committee with information on what families need and hope for from the program. For more information in the survey, go to www.mmsd.org or call 204-4357. Public Health Madison Dane County recently announced that all school H1N1 clinics are canceled. The soonest that public health will be able to resume school H1N1 clinics will be early December. Resumption of school clinics is based on vaccine availability. For updated information, continue to check the district website at www.mmsd.org. A community forum on the recently approved MMSD plan for talented and gifted education will be held on Tuesday, November 17, 2009, from 6 o'clock to 7:30 p.m. at the Hamilton Middle School Library. The forum will provide an overview of the plan, followed by an opportunity for discussion. Superintendent Dia Nierad and Executive Director of Teaching and Learning Lisa Wachtel will be in attendance. We invite you to attend to learn more about the plan and provide your feedback in response. Next on the agenda is the superintendent's announcements and reports, and I turn the meeting over to Superintendent Nierad.
I'm sorry, I thought I turned it on. Tonight there's one item on the superintendent's report, and that is to share the results of the 2008-09 financial audit for the school district. So coming forward is Eric Cass, Donna Williams, and Renee Messing from Clifton Gunderson LLP. And as soon as they get up here, they will begin that presentation. Hi, Renee.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.
Welcome back, Renee.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be back, especially on such a delightful fall evening. You should have received in your packets a number of pieces of information related to the audit process. You have a full copy of your financial statements. You have a management letter and an audit communication letter. And you also should have a PowerPoint document that is sort of an overview or a highlights document of the audit process. And so I'll make my comments from that PowerPoint presentation, but I'm certainly happy to answer any detailed questions that you have. On the second page of the PowerPoint handout is just a real brief summary of the components of the financial statements. And the document itself is about 60 pages long, so there's a lot of information in it. A couple of things that I think are really important to note. The first is the audit opinion letter. Your audit opinion says that your financial statements are presented fairly in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. And that's commonly referred to as a clean opinion. And that's what your bondholders and citizens and other interested parties are looking for when they read the opinion, and that's what you as the board hire the auditors to determine. The second part of the report is called a management discussion and analysis, and that's written by your staff. It's a narrative part of the document that really provides some information that's supplemental to the audited financial statements themselves. I think of particular note in there are some charts that identify the sources of revenue for the districts. There's a pie chart in there for your revenue sources, as well as for your expenditures. And it really gives the reader of your statements an overview of how the district is funded, as well as where the dollars for expenses go. So that's on pages 3 to 13. So if you don't have time to read the full document, that's really the part that I think that you would want to spend your time with. The financial statements and the related footnotes go through from pages 14 to 48, and that's followed by budgetary information and other supplemental information for the non-major funds. On the next page is a summary of the financial statement information for the fund statements. And you'll see in that first column, your general fund had revenues of about $295 million compared to expenditures and transfers of $284 million. Now, those numbers compare to budgeted revenues and expenses of $297 million. So on the revenue side, your revenues were a little short of budget. On the expense side, your expenses had a positive variance or under-expended by about $13 million. And so overall, your results in the general fund added $10 million to your fund balance, and you have $35 million at the end of the year. Now, you can see a little part of that fund balance is reserved. That includes the Bassett funds that are held in reserve at the district, as well as some inventory. But the bulk of your fund balance is designated, and it's really designated for working capital. That amount represents about 12% of your operating expenses, and that's really what funds your cash flow during the year, and it minimizes the amount of short-term borrowing that you're required to do during the year. The second column is the special education fund. There you'll see your expenditures were $67 million, and those expenditures are funded by primarily money from the general fund property tax, about $40.5 million of funding from property taxes. The balance is from state and federal aids for handicap education. The next column is the non-major funds. That includes the debt service fund, the special revenue fund, community services, and capital projects. And there you'll see you used fund balance of about $3.4 million, and you have balance at the end of the year of $6.9 million. Of that, $2.5 million is reserved for debt service costs. That's the amount of money that the district holds for debt service between July 1st and December 31st. And then the balance is designated for those particular funds. Most of that balance is in the community service fund, and those funds are required to be held in those funds for those particular purposes. You'll see the grand total column puts your revenues and expenses at over $400 million, and I think that it's important to recognize that the district really is in the business of providing education. Now, a number of years ago, the Governmental Accounting Standards Board recognized that governments are businesses, and they wanted to respond to the need for the public to understand financial information the same way they look at business information. And so they required you to do another reporting of revenues and expenses, and that's really shown on the next page. And that you'll see on the right, on the left-hand side, I've given you just that total column of revenues and expenses and changes in fund balance. On the right-hand side of that page is the reporting that's required under that full accrual or business-type reporting. And you'll see in the funds you had increase in fund balance of $6.9 million. On that full accrual basis, you have increase in what's called net assets of $15.3 million. And when you look at the components that you see there on the top part of that summary, $3.3 million is from capital asset transactions, $8 million from long-term debt and capital leases, and a reduction of $3.2 million from retirement and vested benefits. Similarly, fund balance is converted to net assets at the bottom of the page. You'll see that your fund balance of $42 million converts to net assets of $33 million, and that's really because the amount of outstanding debt and other long-term obligations exceeds the capital asset additions that are part of this convergent process. This is a pretty simplified version of that convergent process. There, as you can imagine, a lot of details that fall underneath there. So that's an overview of the financial statements themselves. The next page talks about some highlights related to the auditor's responsibility under generally accepted accounting principles and auditing standards. And really what that means is that the auditors come in and look at your systems of internal control, and we assess risk within the district's processes, and then we test those areas of higher risk and then test other account balances. So we don't look at every single transaction within the district. I know sometimes to your staff it feels like we do, but we really do focus on those areas of higher risk. The letter also talks about some significant estimates in the financial statement process. Those estimates are really related to the calculation of the post-employment benefit liability as well as the district sick leave liability. The letter identifies that there were no adjustments as part of the audit process, and no past adjustments also were identified. And then the letter identifies for you the representations that we ask your management to provide for us in the audit process. The other matters that are identified in the letter are that there were no disagreements with your management and no difficulties in performing the audit process. They played very well. And really, I want to commend the district staff. The accounting records and the cooperation that we receive are second to none. You really have a very tight system of internal controls and a good staff and very high integrity in the records. Now, we have issued what's called a management letter. And normally in an audit process, the auditors are required to identify things that are significant deficiencies in internal control, material weaknesses in internal control, and then other matters. So relative to your district, we did not identify any material weaknesses nor any significant deficiencies, and that is very positive. The items that you see in the management letter are really things that are identified in terms of other suggestions for improvement or really best practices in some circumstances for things that we recommend as we found during the audit process. The first one is related to the banking resolution. That resolution has a former district employee on the current resolution that has, I believe, already been in the process of change. The second recommendation is related to documentation of reviews and approvals, as well as reviews and approvals of grant budgets and requests for reimbursement. These reviews and approvals really are being done as part of your internal control process, but they really, it's just a matter of documenting who performed them, when they were performed, and providing that evidence. The next comment related to your school secretaries really is just an information piece to identify that the responsibilities of those secretaries relative to the student activity funds really are such that they have full control over the accounts, and so that you have no segregation of duties relative to those bank accounts. We're not suggesting that you make any changes to add people to create segregation, just that you continue to monitor the accounting and reporting from the schools. And then finally, we made a number of recommendations, again, in the best practice area related to information technology, and those items included review of user account access controls, password security parameters, performance of a security audit, some recommendations related to fire suppression and detection, computer use policy for district employees, and data retention policies. And related to those information technology recommendations, again, these are things that we noticed that when we did our internal technology review of your systems, many of those things have changed since the time of our audit or are in process at this point in time and are being addressed by your staff. I don't view any of them as critical to your IT operations. They're really things that can be looked at to improve the internal technology controls. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Question.
Thank you, as always, for such easy to understand and complete information. It's much appreciated. I have a question on page 3 of your PowerPoint, and that's the non-major funds. And why is it that the expenditures and transfers out are higher than the revenues and transfers in?
It's really because you had money in your capital projects fund that you expended during the year. So it was money that came in the prior year and was expended during the current year.
Okay. It's Olson Elementary.
Olson? Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Ms. Moss?
I think last year you mentioned something about the secretaries and the activity funds, and I noticed that this time you had explained that it was because of a lack of staff, and I was wondering, in looking through all of these things, that the kind of it would be nice if we had done these sorts of things. It looks like a lot of them are staff related, or we don't have the staff or have enough people to get these things done. So was that an observation that you made?
The comment related to the school secretaries is really one that exists in nearly every school district. And it's really because the secretaries take the money in, they deposit it, they write the checks, or at least prepare the checks for signature. And so they have a lot of control over the accounts. In your district, you have procedures in place for the bank reconciliations to come into the business office for review, and that really creates a mitigating control related to those funds. So, again, I think it's something that you just need to continue to be aware of, that is an area of risk.
Thank you. I will ask my question. I think I've asked you regularly. And if you could, for our community that's watching, just give a few-sentence summary as to your thoughts on your findings on the audit.
Sure. I think the district is in very sound financial position. I think that the results of operations for 2009 were very positive, with $10 million added to your general fund balance. That fund balance is critical to the operation of the district and the cash flow of the district.
Thank you. Any other questions? Turn it back to the superintendent.
And that concludes my report with a thank you very much for the audit and for the work that you've done with our staff and now communicating it to the board. So thank you very much, Renee.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is our standing committee reports and actions. And first is student achievement and performance monitoring. And I'll turn it over to Ms. Cole.
Thank you, Ms. Silvera. First item is that I believe we have minutes this time. I move to approve the minutes from the October 5th, 2009 committee meeting and look in the new tab, number 3. Thank you. There's a motion and a second. Any comments? Good. All those, Ms. Maslin, advisory. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That passes 7-0. Next, we covered a report on the planning for four-year-old kindergarten, where we had many of the community members come and speak to us and present. You can look in tab 4. And after discussion, I will move that the district continue to work with the community in planning for 4K with an anticipated start date of September 2010, pending a determination of the availability of resources necessary to support the new program.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any discussion? Superintendent?
Just to give you the assurance that next month we will be back to provide you the financial overview and recommendations. So that's the next piece.
Ms. Mathiak, thank you.
On a somewhat related note, I'm wondering if it would be possible for administration to send relative portions of the collective bargaining agreement to our community partners. There's been a lot of, some have them, some don't,
right.
And I think people would find it helpful.
Absolutely.
Thanks. Thank you.
So we have a motion on the table. I'll call the question. Ms. Maslin, your advisory vote?
Aye.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That passes 7-0. Next on our agenda for committee was the math task force recommendations. That's Appendix LLL 5-11. There was no change, so you'd go back to the original committee meeting. I move to approve the administrative response to the 13 recommendations listed in the MMSD Mathematics Task Force report dated June 2008, as said response is presented in the three-page memorandum to the board from Superintendent NIRAD, Brian Sniff, and Lisa Wachtel, dated November 2nd, 2009, with Appendix LLL-5-11. The administrative responses are organized as bullet point paragraphs beneath the applicable task force recommendations.
A second.
There's a motion and a second. Ms. Passman.
I'd like to move to amend the pending motion to direct the administration to provide twice yearly updates to the school board through the end of 2011-2012 school year on the status of the implementation of the administrative responses to the math task force recommendations, with the first such report to be provided in April or May of the school year 2009-2010.
Do we have a second?
Is that a friendly amendment?
Oh, yeah, is that
friendly? Okay. Don't get any friendly.
So do you accept that as a friendly
amendment? Yes, I do.
Is there any objection to that amendment?
No objection, just a question to the superintendent in terms of is that doable in terms of their staff and where we're trying to go with this
it
process?
Is. I'm sorry, it is clearly doable.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Moss?
Yeah, I was wondering what was the original plan for reporting back to the board?
I don't know that we specifically had defined that in the report, had we, Steve?
Okay.
No, we had not. And this is this format is really consistent with what you approved with the talented and gifted
right.
plan as well.
Okay.
So it seems to me we can get on a regular timetable of providing those updates to you for those major reports.
Okay, so we now have to vote on the friendly amendment. No? We can vote. Okay. Is there any other discussion? Okay. Ms. Maslin, your advisory vote?
Aye.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? That passes 7-0. And I move to approve the curricular resource purchases as identified in the Mathematics Task Force Budget Proposal 2009-2010, also found within Appendix LLL-5-11, with total expected costs up to $134,507, and with funding coming from the 2009-2010 budget allocation of $150,000 for implementation of the Mathematics Task Force recommendations. There's a motion and a second. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, Ms. Maslin, your advisory vote?
Aye.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? That passes 7-0. Our third item that we covered was the data sharing agreement on Avid and TOPS, which is the high school program, the pre-collegiate high school program. I move to rescind the action taken at the regular meeting on September 21st, 2009 with respect to the motion as amended that the AVID-TOPS data sharing agreement be approved contingent upon the agreement including data on placement scores for students who apply to the University of Wisconsin System Schools. Thank you. There's a motion and a second. Just for clarification, we have to rescind our prior action so that we can go ahead and actually share the information which is found in the second motion. Any comments or questions? Ms. Moss?
Yeah, I just have one quick question about some of the legislation that has been talked about. Does that have anything to do with what we're talking about here? Because it sounded to me like there was some sort of reporting that was going to be required of institutions of higher learning.
Right, and what the content of that is, that's unknown at this point.
Okay.
I think the similarity here is being able to know more about our graduates over time.
Okay.
I mean, because those systems that are being designed are pre-K 16 systems, but I've not seen anything that would define the content of it at this stage.
Okay.
All right, Ms. Maslin, your advisory vote?
Aye.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 7-0. I move to approve the research and data sharing agreement to conduct advancement via individual determination, Teens of Promise, Avid Tops research, and to set forth conditions on the sharing of data between the MMSD and the Wisconsin Center for the Advancement of Post-Secondary Education, as described in Appendix LLL-3-16, dated September 21st, 2009. Motion and a second. Any discussion or questions? Mr. Winston.
I'm going to support this for definitely. Just wondering, has there been any other community groups that has ever wanted this type of information, or are we kind of going, this is a pilot or first time or something like that? I guess my thoughts are that I think this is a good thing that we share information. And you know, we have a lot of community centers in our communities, and we also have a lot of organizations that are doing work with young people. And as much as we can strengthen the tie between the school district and their services, I think we're going to have better students as a result of this. So.
Dr. Nash?
I would agree. In fact, we had a meeting 3 weeks ago with Avid, with the Boys and Girls Club, Centro Hispano, United Way, Urban League, People Program, MSCR, and the Y, on this very topic of how we could be more collaborative, coordinate information like this, share things, and just generally do a better job of working together. So, yeah, we are in that process.
Thank you, Dr. Nash. Thank you, Superintendent.
Thank you. That's good news. So call the question. Ms. Maslin, your advisory vote?
Aye.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? That passes 7-0. The date and possible agenda items for next committee meeting, which will be December 7th, 2009. There's a whole bevy of items. I'm not going to go over them at this time. So I will turn it over to Planning and Development.
First on the agenda is recommended to approve the minutes from September 14th and October 5th committee meetings. I have a motion. Any discussion? Ms. Maslin, your vote?
Aye.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved. Last time we met, we had discussion on the long-range planning concerning student enrollment and school building capacity. There's been no change in this from last week, but Mr. Hartley, would you please address this issue?
And the long-range planning?
Yeah.
It was just a review of the information provided at the committee meeting last week. There was no new information tonight.
Okay. All right. We have no recommendations in this. We're on to the strategic plan, benchmarks. Do you want to talk to that, please?
Benchmarks will put on hold until the December meeting, and it was my memory that we'll talk about a little bit, have a conversation about the first priority action steps as a discussion item only to kind of help give some input and direction for...
Okay.
So if I can refer you to tab 6. Again, it's the intent to get questions, get things clarified, discussion, get board input as we move forward. What you have in the document is the priority ones. It's kind of a good way to organize and begin to get some first steps moving forward. Most of the money recommendations are around things like time for staff to come together to do the work, things like contracting for services, primarily for outside services to help do some evaluations of programs, and also contract like the communication plan, get an outside group to come in and help us develop an overall district communication plan. And then finally, there's some of the money spent on that all-staff in-service day around sharing best practices. We'll use a little bit of a similar model next year, and also some time to follow up from that. So in the packet is the priority one, and at the end of that packet then is the budget sheet.
All right, shall we take this one literally step at a time here? A discussion on student action plan focus area, year one priorities. Someone like to talk to this issue, please? Ms. Silvera? I know, we're all doing that.
I have a general question, request, and then more specific. Throughout a number of the plans, not just one, you just talk about forming different action teams as you go through, and leadership teams and the like. As these teams are formed, could we get a list of who's participating, just so we will be able to acknowledge and know who's doing what?
Absolutely.
Because some of them appear to be community members and people in the school, so I think it would just be helpful to just have that recognition.
Absolutely.
And then action step number 5. Am I still on the right one? On the individual learning plans, it ties in very heavily with Infinite Campus.
Mm-hmm.
So when now will we have the report on the status of Infinite Campus and the usage of both staff and family members? Because that seems to be tied into the success, the possible success of this action step.
The date that we have for that is December/January, no later than January coming. And that was originally framed up as a 6-month recommendation from last June. And so we're pushing to have it in December, and at the outside it would be January, but you will have that very soon.
I suppose maybe it makes sense to wait until we see what the Infinite Campus report says, but my concern is if the usage rate by families and by staff is continues to be low, then will that prevent success of the individual learning plans? And I guess it's hard to have that discussion without knowing the IC stuff.
Yeah.
So we may want to circle back to this at some point. Or maybe when you report on Infinite Campus, if we can just update on the individual learning plans as it ties in, might be more helpful. Thanks.
You're welcome. Oh, sorry about that. Ms. Mathiak, and followed by Ms. Cole.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on that because the questions that I have about, I have similar questions because, I would be concerned about our ability to actually develop such plans if we don't have full staff implementation. So I'm looking forward to seeing what we need to do to get there. As I look at this list, that sort of very specific question has me wondering what you would anticipate, how you anticipate working with the budget for this. Do you anticipate that these would come forward as individual consent items, or is it your intent to bring forward a strategic plan budget all at once?
I think our intention with this document was the latter, in terms of this is a strategic plan document. There are some cases where the board policy on bidding would be invoked just because of the dollar amount. So we saw those as coming back as a result of the bid process. But that's how we were looking at it. And we're certainly open to other ideas that the board would prefer.
I guess part of me is thinking that, and this is just my personal opinion, but I'm thinking that it may be easier to just move individual pieces of this forward with the budget rather than waiting. If you have things that are ready to go and the board's ready to approve them, maybe they could go ahead. Others, like the ILPs, and which are very heavily tied to Infinite Campus, that may take a while to get approved, depending what we find. So, you're going to need to make some strategic choices, I could see it working either way. Mm-hmm. Slight preference on my part for going with what's ready to go forward and keeping the other ones active but not approved for expenditure.
Can I ask a clarification question about that?
Yes, you may.
It seems to me that to the extent that the budget items are for professional development, those aren't normally the things that would come before us and for a consent item or a budget, specific budgetary approval,
right,
which would speak to having an overall strategic plan budget.
But none of these are, I'm not seeing professional development in here.
I think.
As things that would be, there are a few, but it's not entirely clear. And for those, you're right, we wouldn't typically do that. A lot of it depends on how we do the professional development.
And there are extended employment kinds of time, just kind of time to pull people together, to pay them to do some of the work. So there's some extended employment kinds of time in here.
Yes.
If I might, in the future, meaning for following budget years, one of the things we've talked about is making within the budget document explicit anything that would be affecting strategic plan recommendations. Now, we haven't decided yet how that would look or the specific format for this. If that can be worked out, and I believe it can, through the budget document in following years, it's figuring out what's the best way to do it for this budget year, because the budget was approved with a dollar amount for the strategic plan, and now we have to deal with that list of specific items, which is, really this green sheet. And the way I would see it is we would make some recommendations in line with the options that Ms. Mathiak pointed out next month to you. We are not requesting specific final action tonight. So we'll frame that up in more specific recommendations next month.
I think Ms. Cole goes next, please. Then Ms. Moss.
Yeah, I had a couple questions in regards to this individualized learning plan. Specifically, I think I'm going to need some more information on what this would look like. How will this look differently for a high school student with an individualized learning plan versus what we have now? I think the feedback that I'm getting from the community, specifically West, is that this is a matter of students having access to electives or whatever. So I'm trying to balance what are we getting from this versus the number of staff that we have on hand or the number of opportunities or access that students have, and how will that change this? Will they have more opportunities to take a diverse amount of electives or less, or how will that tighten that piece up? I'm also concerned about MTI and where the teachers stand with this. I guess that ties in with the infinite campus. You know, how much buy-in are we expecting? And then I would really like to have a date put on this. When do we expect to have a certain percentage of 9th through 12th graders with an individualized learning plan so that I have a, I think sometimes I have a different timeline than others, obviously. And so I want to know when that is. And also when we can expect, how would the rollout look? Will we go back to middle school? Will we go back to elementary? And then that's all for now. I'll just...
Yes, of course. Okay. Of course. Sorry. Right. I have to be more official in this.
Yeah. Okay. Just to follow up on one of the things that Ms. Cole mentioned, I was also wondering when we do the implementation of the ILPs, if you're predicting that additional staff time would be needed, because in my mind, I'm thinking about the time that it takes to write an IEP in the meeting time that is required. And I don't think it's going to be that kind of additional time. I don't think we'll be able to expect that of people. But there will be additional time, it seems, for counselors and for some of the teachers. And I was wondering if that is going to possibly be coming into the contract.
We'll give you a response. Certainly they're not going to be as, the intent is clearly not to be as detailed. There's an IEP, and I don't want to confuse the two documents. So. But we'll get a response for you.
Okay. And the other part of my question is also about the budget. And I'm sure I should know this, but when we voted to move the strategic plan forward, we voted on an amount of money, correct, that's in the budget. Did we decide that we needed to vote individually on each item that comes up? And is that what we're talking about doing or not?
I don't believe at the time that was presented that there was any discussion relative to the method for approval. And I think what I'd like to do is, listening to your discussion tonight, we'll frame up some options and have that included in the recommendations that'll come back in December for you. But I don't have any recollection that we talked about the specific approval process. It was more, could we include that dollar amount, in the budget? Was the board able to do that? That's my recollection.
Okay, and I'm sorry. We voted on the ARRA funds and so many different different things that I was – thank you for clearing that up.
Sure. Mr. Hughes?
Yeah, following up on Ms. Cole's comments and Ms. Moss's, I have a question. My recollection is that they kind of already developed individual learning plans at West. Isn't that where this proposal kind of comes out of or grows out of what has been taking place at West over the last?
Yes. I mean, I think that, and maybe Dr. Nash can speak more directly, but there is, through the guidance office, an attempt to create an individual learning plan for students, I think. And so I think that's part of where this is coming from.
So that's why you chose the high school to start with, because we had some preliminary work done there?
Yeah. Always a good place to start when you've got a model.
Okay.
And that plan's been in place for, I'd say 4 years now. Or various iterations of it. So it has, even prior to the strategic plan, long been the wish of the other three high schools to have access to a similar document. And we put the first step in place. You may remember, I think it was 2 years ago, we agreed that WISC Careers, we would use it at both the middle and the high schools. So there would be a continuous way to converse middle to high school. Right now, middle school kids can, at least in terms of career exploration, it's called, each kid has a locker on a screen, and they can look at some career information. They can look at maybe establishing some goals, some hopes and dreams, and they keep that in their locker, and that moves on with them to the high school. The ILP is obviously far more detailed than a locker. It also would have assessment scores, and if we move forward on using the EPAS system, the ACT Explorer plan, and eventual ACT, that's the kind of record keeping we would have. So teachers would have that information at their fingertips, as would parents and kids.
Well, I wonder whether, is there something now available at West that could be provided to us as an example of the direction in which
Absolutely.
We're heading? I think that would be useful.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you want to ask some more? I had a few questions too, but go ahead.
Yeah, so I guess I had this misunderstanding. So this is actually just access to a program so that the kid, that what happens at middle school is...
It's a plan.
Like a platform.
Yeah, it's okay. An educational plan that the student, the counselor, perhaps a teacher advisor, and parents can work on together. Mm-hmm. Just kind of, it's like a mental, a virtual folder, essentially. And so it would be available, and again, very useful to both families and to staff as well.
Okay, so then that kind of answers some of my questions, perhaps, that this wouldn't take a long time, I assume.
And no, part of what we're doing right now...
It's not going to affect scheduling.
Sure, sorry to interrupt.
That's
part of what we're doing right now is working with WIS Careers, who has been our primary vendor, so to speak, to make a talk with IC. So it's the... That's where we're at this point. But we do have the bones of the high school plan.
Okay, let's take this one step further. I believe that we're also going to implement a plan for our TAG students.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and that's different from this plan.
It could be, well...
Or is it the same except within there we're making recommendations for classes?
Correct.
Well, it could be for anybody.
Anyway. Yeah, for anybody. Right. Absolutely.
So this does coincide with our TAGs?
Yes, it does.
Plan. Does that seem reasonable? From the sound of this, I wasn't quite sure.
What I would want to be certain is that we have a defined, in the plan, it's called the differentiated educational plan.
Right.
And then once we have that, can it be integrated into this process?
Mm-hmm.
So we're using systems in compatible ways.
Okay.
But I think what we have to do is we have to start with the construction of the TAG DEP, Differentiated Educational Plan, and then go that route.
Okay. All right. That helps, too.
Right. Because I would, I might add, I think it's really important for not only staff to understand that there's a differentiated plan, but also for kids, the students themselves, to understand that that is part of their route to whatever is part of their educational plan.
Okay.
So they understand.
Can I just have one more question, then? At one point, we were going to test all of our kindergarten students and develop a plan for them. Wasn't that true at one point?
Screening?
Yeah.
We do a kindergarten screener for all kids.
So when we're doing that, should we not set up an individual plan for those kids from the start?
That's what we're hoping to.
Okay. All right. Yeah, Ms. Maslin and then Ms. Mathiak.
I just wanted to say that when we're implementing this strategic plan, and especially this individual learning part, I think it's really important that it's fully explained to students and parents, and that they're trained how to use it, because I had no idea that we had that even at West, and I can't think of one kid who I know who uses that online resource, and it sounds like a really useful thing, especially once it's extended to all of the students. So I think that's an important step.
Thank you for that.
Yes, Ms. Mathiak.
Yeah, I appreciate that, too, because as a parent, part of me is saying, what do we know about whether people are actually using what's there? I, like Mr. Hughes, I would find it very, very helpful to have some examples, because, frankly, I went to the WIS Career site and was horrified, because it, focus is, it is a career-focused thing, and that absolutely flies in the face of what we know about liberal education and all the other things that we say we embrace. So I would like to see this as it is applied more on a day-to-day basis, because, frankly, it's career exploration is one thing to fantasize that high school kids, and there are some, I know some who are extremely focused and know exactly where they're heading at a very, very young age, but the overemphasis on careers provides an extremely warped and perverted focus for young minds that should be encouraged to explore and draw broadly on many different knowledge systems, not turn into little automatons who think their lives are over because they failed a math test.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. There is, to say it, and it is, I suppose the technical term is a career exploration, but for me it's a goal-setting tool. Nothing more, nothing less. And we know, we well know how many times students, high school students and young adults change their mind or for many, many reasons change careers. So it's more about having some level of direction in where you're going, but not saying I'm going to be a fireman. You know, too early in the game, so to speak. So I think that's important. Lynn Marino at West High School, a counselor at West, is probably our best resource, and I'll talk with him and have him join you some evening and around a computer, hopefully, and we'll give you an idea of what it's capable of doing.
Could I ask, is this computerized right now, what West is doing?
Yes.
So we would be able to tell from our network systems about user access and usage?
Yes.
It would be helpful to have a sense of the user data.
Yes.
And especially, you know, is it a very small group? You know, are lots of students using it? Is it a small group? Mm-hmm. Part of it isn't that I think this is a bad idea. It's more that if we're going to invest time and energy and blood, sweat, tears, and dollars, and that's my concern with Infinite Campus. I really would like to see something that is good, that is of the most benefit to the students, and that is used widely.
Okay, Ms. Cole?
Yeah, sorry to keep you up here.
No, fine.
One comment that I would have is that I would like to know when you are thinking of tying in the kindergarten. I mean, for me, it's helpful to be able to communicate that back to the public. That, likewise, knowing that that we have piloted it for 4 years at West, I didn't know that, and just having that kind of diagram that shows how we're doing it, I think can go really far to kind of just establishing with the community of trust. The other thing that I am concerned about, and I'm sure that you can address, is the fact that it's not just to have our kids have a plan, but that this brings them into alignment with whatever options are available in the high schools, and I think that it gets back to Ms. Passman's comment about the TAG plan. It's being able to figure out ways to show families and students that they have these options and opportunities. Right. And I would rather us have a discussion on the things ahead of time that we may not be able to do. Then deal with that afterwards. And so I think this is a good direction, and I'm glad that you clarified a lot of this, because I was thinking it was something completely different. And this is very helpful, because I think that it's a matter of communicating this effectively.
Sure. So, one more thing. I think it's part of an answer to what you've been talking about. not only would it help in course planning, et cetera, within the high school, but it also helps with course planning outside of the high school in terms of post-secondary options, in terms of the new Global Academy, in terms of our Madison Virtual Campus. What I like about the notion of having every student have this plan is then every student does have access to all of this information. And we don't run into the kind of situation that we often do where some kids ask, some kids don't. Some families push, some families don't. This way, everybody would have the same opportunity for a full-blown plan to get them where they want to go.
But some students have computers and some don't at home.
Very true.
And that's, we have to really consider what we're going to do with those other students and set aside time for them.
That's part of the smaller learning communities conversation, is providing kids with time for that kind of planning.
Yeah.
Do you want to follow up on your question?
I wanted to, it's just a very quick follow-up one, because it's true that a lot of kids don't have, or more have them in their home than you might imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But community centers and libraries are also places where people have access to computers, and a lot of our kids do use those resources. So
they do.
Is there a component, should this get moving, where we could work with staff in those areas to let them know what's there?
Absolutely. We've already got a wonderful partnership with the public library system on ACT preparation. So they just, they're a wonderful resource.
Okay. Ms. Moss?
Yeah, I think that sounds wonderful. I was actually thinking about something like the Meadowood Community Center and the staff there.
Yes.
Since we are, partially funding it, it would be great if there could be that kind of a transition or kind of a for the kids. I was also wondering if when we do get all of our students online with this, is there a possibility that their interests could then drive our offerings? I mean, I know we're talking about how we want the kids to know what is out there for them to take, but what if there are a lot of kids who have a certain interest?
I think in our past, it has been, offerings have been very much teacher driven or state requirement driven, and it's a large part of our innovation team conversation right now to determine how to integrate student voice into our course proposals, into our sequencing of courses, and it's going to be very interesting as we try to give out enough information about, say, the Global Academy, to see the kind of interest that sparks and drives. And we do feel it's time for a shift. And I think too that much of the strategic plan talks about 21st century skills. And we have to take a very, very hard look at what that means and how our current course alignment or course content aligns to those 21st century skills.
All right. Shall we move on to the next curriculum action plan, which is curriculum. Strategic objective curriculum. Comments. I'd like to start just by saying I appreciated very much the on number one action step that we say see also tag plan goal two, that we discuss things in terms of cultural relevance, so we're tying it back to the strategic plan and these action steps. Anybody else have any comments? My next was curriculum, right? Okay. All right, is that all right? Yeah, let's go on to curriculum. Okay. Any comments on curriculum?
Let's go. Just for clarification, there's multiple pages. So page two of curriculum, because there's another two, that first page where it talks about strategy objective, we're not going ahead and approving performance measures. I just want to make sure.
Nope, they're just for information, and they're just suggested. We're not approving those at all. We have not approved those.
Okay.
All right. Any other discussion on Yep, Ms. Moss.
Okay. Under civic engagement, I just wanted to say that I'm very pleased at seeing the service learning as a component. Sorry, that's page 7.
Yeah, thanks for saying that.
Actually, that's under performance measures, so... Anyway, I'll just
no, it's an action
comment
step.
That,
it's an action step.
Right, comment that I was pleased to see that as part of the plan and taking a prominent place.
Again, I have a question for Pam. Can this be connected to that famous course I wanted given in high school, the civics course, in some way?
Sure.
So can we bring that into the discussion and develop? It is? You'll get it back to us and tell us what's going on?
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
And if I could, that is a very specific action plan in the strategic plan.
Right.
So it's
okay.
There.
Questions, people? Anyone? Yes, Ms. Moss.
Okay. Under cultural relevance, page 10, number 3, it said that the initial pilot will be conducted for professional development for a small group of interested classroom teachers will be conducted at Mendota and Falk. And I had thought that there were already programs going on there. There are already teachers who were practicing cultural relevance. And is this something that we're just, it's kind of like Pam was saying, we have the model, so we're going to build on that. Mm-hmm. So these are not starting from scratch?
I'm going to have Sue come up and respond. Thanks.
While she's coming up, this is a good example of the integration of the IRA plan in terms of a strategic plan action step, that number 3 where you are right now, Ms. Moss, and others. You can see in that right column there's a reference to the approval of that additional position under IRA. There aren't many of those, but that is one of them.
The project that is new to Falk and Mendota is an extension of the work that we've been working in our district with on cultural relevance. We have a partnership now with Department of Public Instruction through this project called CREATE. And so what we're doing is additional training for these teachers based on the direction that we end up wanting to go within the district. So it's taking a look at embracing African-American culture into classrooms where right now that's void. And so this is a new step that we're taking within this whole direction. We have other partnerships through MSAN that we work through some of this with, LEADscape, which is a national partnership that we use with special education and disproportionality. And so this is a new partnership that we're
working with. And is this similar to, what's at Lincoln already?
It was at Lincoln. Well, it was the type of pedagogy was at Lincoln, but now this is a project that Lincoln's not part of.
Okay.
This is something that Andrella's done, and she took a group of these teachers down to Atlanta, and this is one of the things I'd love Andrella to share with us at some point. Mm-hmm. What happened on this trip, what it was all about, what the repercussions have been back in the schools. I think we really need to discuss this because it sounded so exciting to me when I heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
And
we can do that.
Yeah, I would like that
sure,
to be.
We could do that.
And I think the board should hear it. Ms. Cole.
Thank you.
Yeah, in regards to the action steps in this section, one thing that I would like to see if there's any other options available are when you look at action step 4 and 7, I believe that's it, I'm very comfortable looking at the professional development and establishing the district infrastructure. Where I'd like to know whether there's any options for us is when we start creating things that may already be available outside of the system. It's not that I don't, I'm not in the depths of it, and I'm trying to get a understanding of whether there's any way that we can save time and money.
Ms. Cole, what page are you on for 4 and 7?
No, I'm on action step. It would be page 10 and 11.
Oh, okay.
And it's action steps 4 and 7 that are talking about creating management and data systems. I know that in my readings I've seen this stuff already available, and I know that sometimes we purchase things and then we modify them, so I just want clarification.
Just to make sure we're looking outside at best practice.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yes. We probably already do that, but these are issues that were just very relevant when the community got together and when we said closing the achievement gap and addressing cultural relevancy. You know, I just want it to happen as soon as we can.
Sure.
How close are we now to hiring someone on the middle and high school level for this? Are we getting close?
Close.
Okay. Anyone else discuss this? Discussion more? Ms. Cole?
On curriculum? Are we still on curriculum?
We're still on curriculum. Tell us what page you're working from, though.
Okay. Now I'm on page 13 with flexible instruction.
Okay.
And this is an area where I just need more clarification on what's going on with the TAG advisory group. This is a kind of similar to what, maybe it's not, but to me I see it as similar to what Ms. Silvera raised, where we have TAG advisory group working on issues. And there was mention that the TAG plan that we passed was that some of it was changed. And so I'm trying to get a better understanding of the wording. It might be minor changes, but there was something that was specifically changed in the TAG plan, and it might have had to do with flexible instruction or grouping. And
We'll make a link between this and the TAG plan, a direct link between the two, and just see kind of...
Well, and specifically the advisory group, because okay. we made a point of asking, we just haven't gotten an update. We had a point of making sure that we invited more people into that group, and that they were to review this. And
There will be a mid-year update on the TAG plan based on the action that you took when it was reviewed and approved. And I believe that the changes, although I want to check and we can for the update on end of the week, have to do with the final motions that were made at the end relative to the professional development of staff members in TAG to make sure that that got incorporated in the plan, the actual action that the board took when it was approved. That's what I think is being referred to, but I'll go and check with staff on that.
Anything else? Anyone else? Ms. Moss?
Yeah, on the flexible instruction, page 13, I was looking, one of the things that I really liked about the plan, the strategic plan, after you made some changes to it, was the aligning with the other task force. And I noticed that in this document, I didn't see as many mentions of the other plans. And in this one, I was thinking that the move to investigations in elementary math and the with supplementing with Singapore, and that would be something that could be added as something that we're doing to help with the differentiation in flexible instruction in elementary schools. So just a thought to kind of tie things together.
Again, take a closer look at the major task force and committees that have come forward and make sure we're making the links.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
See, number two does mention the fact that there will be teams representing regular education, special education, ESL, and gifted programming based on the student needs. But that's in addition to what you're asking, and that's good. Okay. Any other discussion on this, or we can move ahead to strategic objective staff, year one priorities. Questions, comments? Ms. Silvera?
Just a comment under the recruiting and retaining staff. I see a number of action steps that talk about doing things.
What page, I'm sorry?
Pages 6 and 7.
Okay.
A number of action steps that talk about doing things earlier or faster, which is good, but nothing, to me at least, jumps out that we're going to be doing things differently. And so I don't know if there's any kind of different means of recruitment inherent in any of these steps that we can hear about, or if it's just doing it faster but at the same places.
Well, I believe right now you see main emphasis on changing timelines, but I think we also have some discussion, Bob, about the where we recruit, have we not? I mean, that's also part of this, which may not be all that different other than locations, but is that correct?
Sure, come on up. Come on down. Ms. Silvera just wanted to know, are things actually going to be done differently? Or are we?
As opposed to sooner.
That's a good question. We do evaluate our recruiting plan every year to see where we are getting our candidates from, and you know, how many trips we make versus how many candidates we get from each trip that we make. And I mean, we've already tweaked our recruiting plan, and we will continue to do that. I think this has just put a more of a spotlight on it, and to make sure that it's cost effective, and to make sure that we are getting as many candidates as we can for the amount of money that we're spending in our recruiting efforts.
Ms. Mathiak?
I want to follow up on that, because I think that the issue of will we do things differently is mission critical here. I believe we've talked already about how if we're going to the same places that don't have many minority candidates, we're not likely to get different results. And so when I look at page 7, action step number 3, enhance a hiring preference system for positively evaluated student teachers and administrative interns and teachers/interns who are employed, I'd like to know the demographic composition of those groups, because if we are drawing from the same old sources, I would guess that we are not going to diversify our staff if we enhance a hiring preference for that group.
That group.
Yeah,
that group that we're speaking of right now is mostly local. So the people that work summer school for us, if they haven't worked for us in the past, are either number one coming from other school districts, or number two fresh grads right out of school that are coming. But we're not pulling those kinds of employees from very far away, just for summer school, and as well student teachers. Although student teachers is probably a little bit better, because we're pulling a lot from two of our, or we're not pulling a lot, but we're pulling more from two of the more diversified UW campuses, which would be Whitewater and Platteville. So those two schools have increased their amount of student teachers coming to our way. But those two areas are not big minority recruiting
avenues. That's my point,
right?
That if we enhance a hiring preference for student teachers, administrative interns, and teachers/interns who teach during summer school, that actually undermines our goal of having the staff reflect the student body, because that group does not reflect our student body.
Right. If you would say that those people are replacing our minority candidates, but I don't think they really are. I think that group is probably replacing some of our other white candidates. But and we're trying to get a higher level of what the purpose of this is, to get a higher level of teacher that principals have seen and said that these people can teach well, and to give them a little bit added boost into our pool, not so that they displace minority candidates, but so that they are given given credit for what they have done, either as student teacher or as a summer school teacher.
Right, but they inherently cannot enhance the diversity of our staff, which we desperately need to do. I mean, we have 95% of our teachers and 95% of our subs and 95% of our clerical workforce is white. And our student body is not 95% white in any school. So my point is not who replaces who, because I don't think we can even look at it that way. It's what we're essentially doing is privileging people who are already privileged at a time when we say it's a significant priority to have a workforce that reflects the demographics of our communities. That's why I question why you would give a hiring preference to a group that defeats your priority. And by you, I mean us.
Right.
Why
right.
We would collectively. So I would actually ask that some thought be given to reconsidering that particular action step, because I don't think it helps. And I understand, then maybe we need to diversify. If we want to do that,
yes,
then let's diversify the student teachers and the people that we're drawing on. But until we've done that, I'm really reluctant to say we want to make this a priority for hiring, because it then shoves people out of the way that we absolutely need to get into our schools. So I would just like some more thought given to what impact that particular action step would have on the priority of having a workforce for staff reflect students. The critical issue, it impacts the staff reflect students, but I would argue that it's an inverse and negative impact. It's not helping to move that goal forward.
Mr. Hughes?
Yeah, I take Ms. Mathiak's point. I think that the staff action plan does not have as a sole goal simply increasing the hiring of underrepresented members of the staff. That's a critical part of it. But another critical part of it is to improve the overall level of teaching and leadership skills of the staff in the schools. So not all of the action steps are going to be directed specifically at increasing the representation of those groups that are underrepresented. Those are many of the action steps, and I agree that they're critical, but it's not all of these aren't either or. I think part of it is to try and get the best potential teachers that we can, and if there are impediments in our hiring process that stand in the way of that, as for example the timing of our providing offers to teachers, or we don't appropriately take advantage of the skilled people that we see who are student teaching or summer schools, then I think that it's appropriate to have an action step that addresses that along with other action steps that are addressed at increasing the makeup of our teaching staff to reflect the makeup of the school. I don't see that they're not necessarily in conflict, and I don't think that, well, I think what Mr. Nadler said, that we are not, that to the extent that we are eliminating impediments to hiring who we think are the best people, that doesn't necessarily work across purposes with our efforts to increase the diversity of our staff, I don't think.
Any other comments? Ms. Moss?
Well, and, And I just to add on to that, I think that Ms. Mathiak's comment about increasing the diversity of our summer school staff might be also a good goal for us, because from what I understand, the makeup of the student body during summer school is largely students of color. Is that correct?
Yes.
So that would be something that we can also look at, and then this would work for both for all qualified candidates, you know, this action step. And then we would be able to hire, you know, ideally hire more teachers of color if we were able to start with that recruiting even back that far. And you may already do that. I don't know.
It's very difficult to hire summer school teachers, and it's especially difficult to hire summer school teachers that aren't local, mm-hmm. without any kind of promise of a full-time job in the fall. And that we don't know when we hire summer school teachers, because we're hiring summer school teachers in January and February.
Do we have any kind of a system where if they're can summer school be turned into kind of almost a probationary time, where if they do a good job, then they could have kind of a jump ahead into the hiring process for the fall?
Well, that's what this one
and that's what
does.
This is.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Ms. Cole? And Ms. Mathiak?
Well, I thank you for this conversation. You know, these strategies, we've changed this language before, and I'm not asking to change the language, but I read it differently when we were talking about recruiting and retaining staff. I see it as two things that we need to do side by side, and one is that we have this issue that we want to have effective teachers and leadership skills, and part of this is just more demands keep getting placed on classroom teachers beyond what we kind of demand of ourselves sometimes, and I don't know how we're going to get around that. It's a difficult task, but I also read this as furthering the development of programs that target the recruitment and retention of staff who reflect the cultural composition, and I'm just really struck on that, because this really affects us in ways that I see on a personal level in my own kids' school, and I just see reflected in the achievement gap and the non-achievement when it comes to kids of color being in AP courses and advanced courses and having opportunities. I look at it from this different perspective as a woman who went into the biological sciences, and when there's not a lot of women professors, you just don't think that you can be a professor, so you go into something else. And so I think it's imperative that we have a diverse body of staff, and that we really have to just spell it out how we're going to do it and make sure that's clear, because I think if we don't, then we're sending two different messages, and it's not that I disagree with how you're going about this, it's just that I think we need to be very clear, because my expectations are similar to what I've heard from the community, which is diversity. So it can only serve for these kids. It can only serve better for these kids.
Ms. Mathiak?
I guess, I understand the issue. We want both things. We want an excellent bunch of teachers and administrators. We also want diversity, and I believe they are absolutely compatible. I think what confused me is when I look at the performance measures, all of them relate to the diversity of our workforce. So if we're also looking at a formal system to support and inspire continuous development of effective teaching and leadership skills, et cetera, if it's something more than related to the diversity of our student body, then those performance measures don't really reflect what we're trying to do here. And then when I look at the critical issues, all of them say staff reflects students. So that's sort of the nature of my comment. These are about cultural diversity, and therefore giving a hiring priority to a primarily white group of people does not enhance diversity. That's my point.
I'd like to say something to that. We recruit these people, and they want to stay in Wisconsin, or they want to teach in Wisconsin, or they want to stay in Madison and teach in Madison. But the vast majority of our students who go on to higher education, we know now, is not a very diverse group of students. Therefore, the reflection in curriculum instruction in all our colleges is going to be not a diverse student body. And there we have the catch-22. And until we even the playing field and get more of our students, now what comes first, the chicken or the egg here? Do we have to even the playing field right now in our school district to get more students to college, to get them into education, to get them back into our schools? And, you know, we were looking for, Ms. Silvera said, some sort of different ways of doing things. And I thought at one point we had mentioned sort of growing our own teachers, of taking our students and speaking to them about teaching as a career and helping them and following them through the whole high school program and getting them into teaching. Is that someplace in there that I
did? That is clearly, yeah.
Oh, hello.
I'm thinking of even getting even earlier. Getting some students in middle school even interested in the career education, not just the high school. These are the kinds of things I think we can do for ourselves.
But we also can make choices about where we recruit, and if we understand that there are no students of color available for student teaching from an institution, we might want to think more broadly about where we're getting our student teachers.
All right. We also had a problem with certification, do we not, from another state? So we come into all... I'm not saying we're against...
We're making a lot of excuses right now.
No,
because
I know,
there are plenty
I know that.
Of people who go to... who are people of color who go through schools of education... Not all of the, frankly, we rely on UW-Madison, which is handicapping us. Mm. That's a big problem. We need to cop to it, accept it, and move on to a strategy that's going to get people in the door who can help do what we need to get done. And I think I heard Mr. Nadler say we're starting to do that. But the fact is we also hold up, if they come from other states, they can't get certification. Well, there are people who do get certification coming in from other states, and I think there are lots of ways we can look at that, including looking at, and as I understand it, it is hard to get our regular school year teachers to teach summer school, so maybe there are people who are moving into town. There are lots of ways to look at this. My main point is let's reflect on this step and what it is that we'd actually be doing if we implement it as is.
No, I definitely agree with that. The bottom line is we want the best teachers we can find for our students. And that's it. All right. Anybody else want to discuss anything on this particular one? We can move right along to resource and capacity. Comments on resource capacity? I have not been reading what these things are about for the few people that can find channel 900 and something. Maybe I should read what this is all about. Resource capacity is we will rigorously evaluate programs, services, and personnel through a collaborative, data-driven process to prioritize and allocate resources effectively and equitably and vigorously pursue the resources necessary to achieve our mission. That's resource and capacity. Open for discussion. All right, Ms. Mathiak, Ms. Silvera, Ms. Cole. Mr. Hughes.
I just have two questions, and they're related. I'm looking at action step one. I was relieved to see that it's budgetary decisions. We're talking about not boundary decisions, which is what it says on the yellow sheet. but I would really like to hear what this means. Make funding decisions based on data, e.g. Madison measures, City of Madison. What does that mean? And then what costs $125,000 to implement these steps? I'm on page 2.
Okay, thanks.
Action step 1. Okay. So can somebody explain this? Oh, Eric, he's got some explaining.
Explain them, Lucy. Explain them.
All right. So the first question was, what does this actually mean in terms of, I can try to give an example, hopefully to frame it up. And the second piece was, what costs $125,000? Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right. All right. I'm going to try to start with the first one. So what the concept was to tie budgetary decisions to a system-wide measurement tool was an ability to provide information and or data to the board and the community to help prioritize resources. So it begins, I believe, in some instances with defining what outcomes you're looking for and then putting an investment towards that outcome. So let's say, for example, the board sets a goal for improving reading scores. We should be able to look at, across the board, or the concept is you should be able to look across the board and see where your resources are being funneled, and you can make decisions based on data to cut resources from an area and or eliminate resources from an area to then supplement, you know, that the area of reading using the example that I used. So that was, I believe, at the heart of what that action step is really looking at, is to give the Board of Education data to direct future funding decisions, as we all know we've gone through in the past. So the second piece, that is a great question. I don't know where the $125,000 was.
I think the $125,000 was identified to be spread out over, it would also include a rigorous evaluation piece, steps 1, 2, and 3, so it was really designed as we begin to look at outside groups coming in to do some evaluation of our programs. We would begin to contract with services to come in and do that, and that was the intent.
I guess what I would find helpful is to see this fleshed out a little bit more. I'm really sorry, because I sort of get the concept, but then if we're starting with business and non-instructional operations, I'm trying to, I would just like to see an example of how this would work, follow, you know, from the starting point of the question to how it would be then followed through to its conclusion. And then, you know, a realistic estimate of what the cost might be, because it occurs to me that this is about 40% of what we'd set aside for strategic plan implementation. And yet I know that in my experience, and I'm not saying that, you know, I feel like we've got these little, you know, Gumby characters or those little stretching, and, you know, you just keep stretching them. And so, you know, the problem you have, Eric, is that you and your staff have been extremely successful at responding to requests for information and framing things in ways that were accessible and understandable. And that's where I sort of stumble on what would we need, unless we were hiring another body to do some of those analysis things that your group does, because what we're asking you to do is increasing exponentially each year. But I just need a feel for what it is we're doing here.
Sure.
Understood.
Okay, Ms. Silvera?
I have a couple of questions. My first one tied along the lines of what Ms. Mathiak just stated. And I agree that it would be helpful to see specifically what is going to be analyzed and then the timeline for when we get information. I'm assuming it's all going to be done in time to make budget decisions. So it just would be nice to see what's going to be out there. Actually, I had two more questions. As you go through and, you know, you get to pursue necessary resources and all the way through, under the columns of resources needed, pretty much they all say external partners, but I'm not sure external partners are reflected on the yellow budget sheet. So I don't know what that means. That's right. So are there going to be all the external partners included in the $125,000, or are we going to?
The $125,000 is a focus on evaluation. You see the external partners identified with many other things, and it's not exclusive to the evaluation part.
Okay, so if we approve some of these things that have external partners, are we approving the need for additional resources? I'm just confused.
Well, I understand that confusion. What we need to do is make more explicit this, like you had suggested, the timetable, what would be analyzed, the timetable for the evaluation piece.
Okay.
I think part of this is to rely on existing relationships and existing collaboratives, partnerships, to do a lot of this other work. But the $125,000 was specifically targeted for program evaluation. But I understand fully what you're saying and agree with it, that we need to make that much more explicit.
Okay, thank you. That would be very helpful.
Yeah.
And
okay, go ahead.
I have one more question. Yeah. On page 5, number 3, use data to develop marketing and/or branding mechanisms or strategies. And it looks like the output is going to be a marketing plan, but there's no costs associated with it.
We've identified in the next section some costs for the communication plan. Or is it in this section, Steve?
No, that's the next section.
No, it's in the next section.
In the
I have
next
questions
one,
about.
Which is, I think, you know, that's sort of interchangeable in terms of the communication plan and things that we'll need to do relative to marketing as part of that. So that'll come in the next section.
Do you want me to save my concern about the $15,000 to the next section?
Whenever, right now it's fine if it's okay with the chair.
Okay.
Do you want me to wait till the next section?
No, let's discuss it now. If it's interchangeable, we should discuss it now.
Okay. I don't understand. Maybe we have a different definition of what putting this marketing plan and then a communication plan together really looks like and would entail. And when you talk about branding and all kinds of things, I don't understand how that connects with a $15,000 cost. I think that cost is way too low. If you're looking at branding activities and, you know, your communication strategies in there, I mean, think you're talking about, you know, a lot more money. So I don't know where the disconnect is. I mean, what you're envisioning as a plan, is this just a little PR plan? We're going to send things out on MMSD today? Or
no,
there's a disconnect in my mind.
And I can see that. And understand that, no, we're not thinking of it as that size or scope. It's much bigger than that. The only other thing I can offer, and we'll go back and look at the costing for this for next month with the more defined proposals, is we're also hoping to engage in some discussions around pro bono help as well. And we may not be able to accomplish that. I mean, I understand that, but that was also part of the consideration. You know, could there be some help that an agency would provide us as a first step? And then if not, we would have to revise the budget accordingly.
There are good people out there. Madison Foundation for Schools has some pro bono people working for them. They're very generous.
But I want to be clear, we are not thinking of it as a minimal plan. We're thinking of it as a full communication plan that would have marketing pieces to it. And I do understand the concern with whether or not that will be sufficient.
Okay. So if we don't get the pro bono work, you'd have to come back to us?
Correct. That's correct.
Okay.
Okay, Ms. Cole was next, I believe, followed by Mr. Hughes and then Ms. Moss.
Okay, this is the section that I think just kind of stumped me a little bit because I just need kind of what Ms. Mathiak was saying before. I just need specifics, and she already relayed the timeline and so forth. One thing that I'm confused, and I think it might just be me, is the action step, page 2, action step 1, and the page 4, action step 6, trying to get a handle on business and non-instructional operations versus district functions. You know, we're kind of throwing everything out there, and we're going to do a pilot. I would just like to know specifically what we're going to do a pilot on for action step 1, and could we come up with something. I can name a couple different district functions, you know, personal preference to analyze, but it would just be more helpful to know where this money's going and how much each of these things is going to take. So those two things, if we could just get more specific, that would be helpful for me. The second thing is that I went back on the district website, and there is a chart titled Action Steps Identified by Critical Issue, and at the end it says End Board Feedback. And there was a lot of feedback from the board on this resource capacity. This was a while ago, and I just would encourage you to go back and look at it just one time, basically because I think there was a comment that I wrote down, and there might have been more, but it just there was a concern by a couple board members to not tie staff up so much and to use outside help. And I think, you know, you're addressing that in one sense with external partners, but I have a personal bias, which is that I don't want to, I need reassurance that we're not going to keep going to the same external partners. Specifically, when I hear things that we're going to use existing partners and that we're going to start evaluating, no offense to this group, but I want to go beyond WCER, if at all possible. You know, they're sort of, I know they're helping us, but I also think that they're a business, and they're, I would just like to know if there's any other options. And maybe not everyone feels that way, but that's me. One other thing is page 4, action step 5. I am still having a hard time figuring out why we're addressing value added when we have so many things going on in the state that are going to impact us with value added. And what I think what I'd rather have is, you know, condense this so we know exactly what we can accomplish in a year instead of taking on so much, especially if a lot of this falls on Eric and his staff. My Lord, you just can't, I don't know how you could do all this. And I think that that's something that I've thought about with this strategic plan, is just coming up with what we can do, physically do, and not, we don't have to accomplish everything, I feel, in a year. It's a matter of coming up with systems, and for me, it's guaranteeing the public that we're going to do this stuff. But so value added is an area where I would much rather have some of the stuff that Dr. Nash is talking about when it comes to the new test scores and new ways of testing, and I would rather have identification of kids that are gifted and talented, yada yada. So that's what I got out of reading that section. Thanks.
Okay. I have to say that I think that value added is absolutely crucial to our analysis. I think it may help us in terms of the feds in declaring sci-fi schools. I think it's very important in individual schools to have this value-added approach. I think we find that we learn a lot about our students from it. I mean, I'm hoping that we'll get all of this data from it. That's what I'm thinking. So I think it's important to have it. But that's, you know, difference of opinion, I guess. Mr. Hughes, do you still want to talk to this?
No, Ms. Mathai asked the precise questions I had.
Wow. Okay. Anyone else? Ms. Plyak, yeah?
Yeah, I actually wanted to do a follow-up question because I realized as I looked, yeah, I was so stumped by you know, step number one that I, you know, sort of as I looked down subsequent pages and got to page 4.
Okay.
Action step number 6 may be the type of thing that action step 1 is actually about. It says conduct analysis of non-academic district functions, e.g. energy use, for example, or transportation, fund 80. Is that the sort of thing that...
I'm gonna,
I'll try to explain the difference, at least what the difference is in my mind. Number six is heavily embedded with the word efficiency. So when you look at number six, the analysis in number six is strictly about gaining efficiencies, kind of going through the, I'll use the example of the bid process we used to leverage two providers for transportation instead of three and created efficiencies within our budget. It's looking at doing financial analysis to gain more efficiencies, whether it's less energy usage, whether it's anything else. We can come out looking at the calendars on there as well. So it's deeply embedded with the word efficiency. Going back to number one, the goal of number one is not necessarily to create efficiency. It's to provide information to the Board of Education to allow them to make budgetary decisions. So the board maybe sets an outcome, and we tie the dollars to that outcome for whatever the outcome may be. And then at the end of the year, we should be able to provide a report saying, here's the investment, here's the outcome you expected, here's what you got. So going into next year, you can leverage budget dollars to say, maybe we need to funnel more resources into getting the outcome we wanted rather than putting the resources over here in a different area. That was the idea.
Can I ask, as we anticipate, I know some of these responsibilities would fall in Mr. Kiefer's shop, so it's not all on you, but for the types of things that we've talked about in terms of preparing for the 2010-11 budget and the types of things that would be envisioned in these action steps, do you currently have adequate staff to meet the demand?
I think for, you know, it's, you know, portions of this are daunting. I'll be the first one to admit that. But I think given the ability to prioritize depending on what the board's goals are, I think that we can definitely take on a couple of these. Getting to Ms. Cole's comments, I don't think it's reasonable that we would have all of these up and running by the end of the year. But an ability to maybe look at a number six as we go into the budget and say, let's create more efficiencies, we should be able to analyze and put some, you know, put some of our time and energy into that as an example. You know, getting at number one, that is a pretty intense endeavor to get that down to the nuts and bolts and creating a system. And that's why it talked about beginning with business and non-instructional operations, because as this expands, if the intention is to expand it across all curricular and all areas, we need some type of model that the board and the community can buy into. So that's going to be in a much smaller scale to begin with. So taking, for example, I don't know a good example off the top of my head, but a non-instructional operation program that we would set a system up and bring it back and look at it, digest it, you know, pick it apart, and then look at expanding that in future years, I think is reasonable. But I don't think we have enough time before 10-11 to get every program. I don't think the intent of that was to have every program in a format that the board and community can look at the 10-11 budget and begin to prioritize, reallocate, and all those types of things.
Yeah, I mean, just to be clear, my question was related not to an expectation that all of this would be up and running, yes, but more the understanding that as all of this is being developed, you also are being asked to do a lot of prep work now to get us ready to go into the next round of budget decisions. And, you know, I'm sort of putting you on the spot because I'm saying, you know, tell us if you need more staff or, you know, what it's going to take to get it done, because I personally am concerned. You know, this is a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that we've talked about doing, preparing for 2010-11, are not easy projects. So I want to make sure that we're A, not killing you guys, and B, that the staffing levels are such that both things can happen without a lot of disruption or displacement.
Ms. Cole?
Just piggybacking on that, I think others asked this question, but can we look into finding out if there's any way that we can use federal funds for this kind of thing, where we're trying to create efficiencies and coming up with a system to help the board make decisions? You know, this could be a short-term thing just to get you up and running, and I agree with everything Ms. Mathiak said. I see this as an area where we can start leveraging, where we don't have a lot of, you know, financially, we're trying in the federal and state arena, but this might be an area where we can actually leverage some of this stuff and be able to make informed decisions and communicate that with the community. And that in and of itself is a good communications plan. So if we can look into that, I would like to know.
Thank you. All right, shall we move on to the last strategic objective that the community developed for us? Organization systems. The Madison Metropolitan School District will promote, encourage, and maintain systems of practice that serve to unify and strengthen its schools, programs, departments, and services, as well as the district as a whole. Comments, questions, statements? Ms. Cole.
Okay, I think I've mentioned this before in the arena of partnerships. It's page 9. Ms. Moss and I went to a presentation a while back regarding different partnerships, and I just think about this a lot when it comes to responsible personnel, that we keep looking outside the system, and there's a whole DVD set on business partnerships, and I just don't want to recreate the wheel. And I also think the Madison Foundation for Public Schools, you know, has established some partnerships, so while I don't mind oversight with the superintendent's office, if we could find a way to use other sources, at least for the first year until we get a handle on, you know, then we might need a new system in place. But I will bring the materials that Ms. Moss and I collected. Do you remember the name vaguely?
Jay something, and yes. I can't remember his last name.
Yeah, he has a whole system where you can inventory your needs, and it's on DVD, and so.
Yes, Ms. Mathiak.
I'm going to keep this short. I'd just like to say that looking at page 9 and the visible results under that one, I think that this is great, especially like the current partnerships are identified and mapped. Because I think that's something that will help all of us. You know, it comes up from time to time in reference to specific partnerships, but I also remember years ago when I was on the partnerships committee, we asked for a list of district partnerships. We just got this long printout, and it was the most useless document. I shouldn't say that because I've received a lot of useless documents, but it was, you couldn't make heads or tails of any of it other than there's this long list of groups that, you know, we may or may not have viable partnerships with. I think a purposeful assessment is long overdue and much welcome.
Okay. Anyone else? So with that, we've come to the we've come to the end of our discussion of these organization action plan, strategic plan. Action steps. What is next on the agenda, Steve, for us, or Superintendent?
The next step will be to take your input and refine our proposal for December.
Okay.
So we will have a specific request based on the input that you provided us at that time.
All right. Board, do we need a 5-minute break before we go on? Okay, we do not. All right. So it's all over to, is it Lucy? Is it you or Beth? Or who's running the show now? Okay.
This brings us to the operational support part of the agenda. I move to approve the minutes from the September 14th and October 5th, 2009 committee meetings as found in tab 7 of your board materials.
Second.
Any discussion? Ms. Maslin, your advisory vote?
Aye.
Board, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? It carries 7-0. We had at our November 2nd meeting, we had a first, I call it a first reading, a first run through on what we might be able to do with yet another refinancing project, and that's the project to refinance our Wisconsin retirement system unfunded prior service liability. It was very, sort of the first get your feet wet, have this on your radar, and Eric Cass and Brian Brewer will be coming back to us at a future meeting with a more specific proposal for how we might approach that to our most advantage with the district budget. We also had a presentation on a request to revise tax increment district number 23, the Capitol Square revitalization. That is found, additional material was in your packet, tab 8. And I don't know if we, is there any discussion on that item? Questions, things that we did not cover or that have come up since we took that up in our committee meeting last week? Ms. Moss?
I don't know. Can Mr. Cass explain kind of the new take on this information? Is that okay with you?
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's
fine. Make the motion. Hmm? You want to make your motion first?
Mm-hmm. All right. In your packet, what I tried to do is break down in an understandable format. As I reviewed it, it's a little bit difficult to understand, even for me after I wrote it.
Bit?
Say it again.
Louder.
Oh, I'm sorry. In your packet, I tried to do some further analysis to try to break down some of the issues from my vantage point with the approval of the amendment to TID number 23. What I'll try to do is explain in words what I was trying to capture in that three-page document. I think that couple issues, at least one of the main issues that's outstanding is the extension of the life of the tax incremental financing district or tax incremental district. They're the same term basically. And what that means is the extension of the life by a minimum of 2 years would keep about $65 to $70 million off of the property valuation, which we assess a tax on. And when we talked about in our budget development wanting to lower the impact of our property tax levy on a $250,000 home, I think that speaks directly to that, because what that extension does is it puts off for, again, at least 2 years, about $65 to $75 million of value coming back on the property tax. And that value not being there inflates our tax rate, which again, taking a step further, would increase the amount of out-of-pocket on that $250,000 home. So when you look at the situation we were in this year when our property values actually decreased and the economy we're in, I think that the extension of a TIF to do an amendment on public infrastructure probably isn't on that avenue in the best interest of the school district. On the second piece, what I looked at, I actually had a conversation with Dean Brasser from the city, who is a little more understanding and in the know in terms of the finances and how they work for a TID district. And I think the staff members that were here representing the city misspoke a little bit in terms of the impact this would have on the income or the residual amount that would be remaining at the close of the TIF. Currently, there would be about $1.4 million in the TIF that would be dispersed at a period of time. And what this is intending to do is to actually use those funds differently. And what Joe Grimacki said at that point in time was we would forego $700,000 of income when the TIF closed. When I talked to Dean, the way he explained it to me is that they raise revenues, and I tried to capture it in here, about $1.3 million. Because that $75 million of value of property that I talked about not being taxable for a school district, the owners of that property actually pay taxes in, and those funds are held in escrow to pay for infrastructure projects, commercial revitalization, all those types of things. So they're projecting to get about $1.3 million in revenue back to the TIF per year. So if you look at the extension of 2 years of that TIF, they would have the money available to pay off the $2.4 million investment. At least that's what he kind of relayed to me. So the foregoing of the $700,000, as Joe put it, was slightly misleading in Dean's eyes, and I just wanted to relay that back to the board so you could have a full picture, at least from the comptroller of the city, in terms of what that means. So really, that's, I guess, the point of what I'm saying with that issue is that it's a little bit negligible that we would be foregoing $700,000 in terms of what was relayed to me by Dean. Again, all that is based on assumptions that the $1.3 million will be raised every year and that the infrastructure will be $2.4 million and that we wouldn't get $700,000. So I think the point of this memo and what I tried to hit on is at this point in time, we're not recommending as administration that Lucy be directed to vote yes on the amendment to TID number 23 for the single reason that the property value needs to come back on the rolls and public infrastructure, albeit a great use of these funds, probably at the end of a TIF district, isn't the best use of funds, at least in my estimation. I think public infrastructure as part of a revitalization in a TIF is a very good thing to do. It helps commercial businesses come in and do what a TIF's created to do, and that's revitalization. I think at the end of a district, the way that this is coming about, I don't believe is in the best interest of the school district. So that's why we're recommending that the board consider directing Ms. Mathiak to vote no at the joint review board.
Just to be clear, Mr. Cass, am I correct in my initial understanding that the infrastructure improvements would actually not be made within the District 23? They're within a half mile of it, so it actually expands. This is not just an extension of TIF District 23. It is an expansion of the area in which these funds would be used.
Yeah,
to areas that were never considered or included in the original district.
That is exactly right. I think sometime after 2000, there was a TIF law change that you could do basically extraterritorial type rights of a TIF district that they could go a half mile outside if the plan was amended, and that's what they're asking for here. One other piece that I think it's important to point out is where this amendment came from is at the 11th hour of budget considerations. The alder in the area looked at this and made an amendment to extend the life and do public infrastructure instead of closing the district, which was the possible recommendation in the 2010 budget. So I just point that out because this in some aspects is, you know, a shift to allow this infrastructure to happen rather than closing the TIF district.
Is the alder Mike Verveer?
I had it in my brain about 5 minutes ago and I cannot remember who it is in the downtown district.
She's. Yeah, I think, you know, the other piece, you know, we did approve extension of a TIF district with the Stoughton Road district, but that also was related to environmental issues and problems with what they had originally planned to do. This is a very, very different animal. Mr. Winston?
Yeah, I see the recommendation there. Definitely, I believe that's the right recommendation to make. And I guess I would kind of tag on to that recommendation that I believe it, I think it's appropriate during this time is that we should contact the members of the TIG committee and tell them the reason why the district is voting no and the ramifications on the district because of this. And I think, you know, obviously, I served on these committees for a couple years, and it's difficult when, you know, we can vote no, yet it can still move forward because there's enough votes there. And so I think, you know, given, you know, what has been explained here, I think we need to talk to the people that are involved with it. So not only is there, you know, a no vote from the district that Ms. Mathiak is talking about, but at least people will have some background knowledge of how this is going to affect us. And so I guess when the time is right, I would tag that into the motion. And again, how that happens, I mean, if you can send an email or anything or something like that, but I think somehow that there probably needs to be more of a, either a phone conversation or a meeting of face-to-face or something along those lines. I'm not going to tell you how to do it, but I just think that people ought to know that. Representative from MATC,
yep.
Dane County, they need to know.
And I've started that already. I've contacted the representative from MATC and spoken with him directly about some of our concerns. He was going to review the information. We're going to talk again later this week. I've talked to the city's representative, who is Dean Brasser, and I mean, he's a very understanding and listened to all my points of view, but he is the representative for the city. I have not contacted the other two individuals, but that's something I intend to do, to talk to them about, what are some of the issues we're seeing so they can see our point of view. And then Ms. Mathiak, I know at the meeting, I believe, would have an opportunity to talk a little bit openly about the board's and the district's concerns if she is directed to vote no, and kind of relay exactly why, and even hand some of this information out so people can read it and understand it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Any other discussion? If not, I move that the board authorize the MMSD representative to the TID Joint Review Board for the City of Madison to vote against the approval of the proposed amendments to Tax Increment District Number 23, Capitol Square Revitalization, and that administration explain to members of that body the reasons for this vote.
Second.
Okay, any other discussion? Ms. Maslin, your advisory vote? Board, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Human resources update on process for the evaluation.
Want me to do that?
Huh?
Want me to do that?
Yeah, please.
We had our ad hoc committee meeting the week before last, and focused on the next step of the process of goal setting for the superintendent, which is going to come up, I believe, on the 23rd. So the superintendent has submitted 5 goals that he is recommending for himself, which came out in the packet on Thursday. So any board members have any additional goals you'd like for consideration or any comments, you can send them to me by Saturday or so. We'll send them out back out to the board so you can look at other people's feedback. And then on the 23rd, we will have a meeting with just the board, followed by a meeting with the superintendent. Finalize the goals. That was what we did. Right?
Okay. And with that, that ends our report. The next day of the next meeting is December 7th, 2009, a date that hopefully will not live on in infamy.
Okay.
There you have it.
Next on the agenda is items handled via consent agenda. And I move that the board adopt and approve all of the motions stated in Section 7.A through and including Section 7.D of the agenda prepared for the November 9, 2009 regular school board meeting, exactly as said motions are printed on the agenda, which motion shall become a formal part of the minutes of the meeting. By voting affirmatively on this motion, a board member expresses his or her affirmative vote on each of the motions consolidated hereby, subject to any express separations that have been made by any member of the school board. Is there a second? Motion and a second. Is anyone going to separate out any of any item? Okay, with that, Ms. Maslin, your advisory vote.
Aye.
Board, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And that passes 7-0. And now we will go past page 3, past page 4, past page 5, and all the way to page 6 of the agenda. Other reports, Common Council Board of Education Liaison, the October meeting was canceled, so there was no report. Student Senate, I'll turn it over to Ms. Maslin.
All right. We have had a couple meetings since the last board meeting, probably the most exciting of which was our retreat to the MMSD ropes course and Memorial or the community center by Memorial, and I was unable to attend. I was sick, but I heard very great things about that retreat in which students from Student Senate teamed up with students from the Minority Student Achievement Network and the Asian American High School Association, talked about leadership strategies in the district, ways to improve them. I mean, that's a relationship we're hoping to continue to improve and cherish in the year to come. And at the last meeting, we voted on student senate officer positions. We have a technical secretary, which will be responsible for web page, et cetera, a public relations officer whose job it is to help promote student senate, and a treasurer, as well as myself, the student representative to the board, and Jessica's position as president. And we are still working on deciding our focuses for the year, which we shall probably be doing tomorrow at our next meeting.
Thank you very much. Next on the agenda is our legislative liaison report. I'll turn that over to the superintendent.
Thank you very much. The information we provided you summarized four bills that were considered and approved by the legislature in the very early hours of Friday, a couple days back. We had received notice on Wednesday through their publishing process that these bills would be entertained on likely on Thursday, which they were somewhat late in the day on Thursday. They were approved all in relationship to Wisconsin being able to apply to Race to the Top funds. I don't need to go into the details of each of those bills. I do not believe that any one of them is consequential, significantly consequential to the district at this stage of the game. What we know relative to Race to the Top is there will be a state application, and if that is funded, the way the guidelines read is up to 50% of those funds can then be applied for competitively by local school districts. And so there is not an ability for local school districts to directly apply to the federal government for Race to the Top. And so obviously, while we don't know if Wisconsin will have a funded application, and we don't know if we would apply if that did happen, you know, obviously we'd want to be in the position to have that conversation. These four bills, along with two that are also remaining, one of which relates to the governance issue in the city of Milwaukee. The question is, will there be a special legislative session for that? That has not been announced yet. It's been discussed that that's a possibility. That remains to be seen at this point in time. But those are the, I detailed for you those four bills that were passed, all connected to the ability of, for the state to apply for Race to the Top. And then as a result, if that was funded, local school districts would be able to apply competitively for a piece of that state grant.
Is it true the state grant, or the Race to the Top money, is just one-year money?
I don't know that it's one-year money, but it is all part of the the ARRA. It's all part of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. So, you know, I can check in terms of the length of time, but it's all part of the turning around the economy. And so, as we've known, you know, with the money that have come so far, very limited time and shelf life for those monies. So I can get you more details on that.
Do you know approximately how much money we could possibly get from this, or how much?
I don't have a figure of what the state is looking for with its application. I mean, it is a large amount of money that the state will be applying for, but as that becomes known, I can certainly pass that on.
Can I ask that you keep us updated when you hear anything about the Milwaukee Public Schools and the potential mayoral takeover?
Yes.
Because at some point, I may ask that we consider writing a letter or position paper to the legislature if we are in agreement with our position on that.
Absolutely. That's all I have, unless there are questions.
I guess, you know, echoing that, it was a little disconcerting to, and even though it apparently is going nowhere, to learn about the bill that Sandy Pope Roberts introduced that would have greatly expanded the Superintendent of Public Instruction's powers. So I guess I would ask that you or Mr. Quick, that these things be flagged for us, because it's one of those things where the combination of the energy around the president's visit, the rhetoric about the mayoral takeover of the Milwaukee public school system, and just the general buzz around what race to the top may or may not mean, and then some of the commentary that was offered over the past weekend at WASB, it certainly got my attention, and I would guess it's gotten the attention of other board members, and we would really like to know the status of the various proposals and when that special session might happen, because we do believe that we want to be on top of it, for the simple reason that it's hard not to feel concerned for what it could mean, what these trends and developments could mean for Madison, taken to their logical conclusion.
If I might just comment on that, and I certainly understand and agree with the request, an article in this afternoon at Madison.com, it was really interesting on the four bills that were passed. And this is a quote directly from Senator Layman from Racine. While chair of the Senate Education Committee, I don't remember ever moving bills through that fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's literally what happened on those four bills.
I think everybody was panicked by the race.
I think they were jumping because the president snapped his fingers. But, I was just I also kind of to follow up on what Ms. Silvera said, I would really like to know what we as a board, or we as individuals and as a board, can do, because Representative Pope Roberts' bill really disturbs me also, that it seemingly came out of the blue and from someone that I would had considered to be a strong advocate for local control of school districts. So I'd really appreciate. It's almost like it's coming so fast and furiously. I don't know that we probably all have to help each other. In fact, I would think to keep up on everything. So,
could I just ask? Would it make sense to try to have a midpoint meeting with our delegation? We met with them in January, but.
Yeah, I think the superintendent is setting up a meeting asked for by Mark Miller and Mark McMahon.
So they can tell us why we got it all wrong, or? Yeah.
Well,
can I mention something? Being at WASB this weekend, it was very clear when, excuse me, when they had the speakers that they, you know, for whatever reasons, the speakers were two Democratic legislators. And I think it kind of flattened the conversation, because they kind of went out of their way to say that they're very much so for education. And I don't doubt what they're saying, other than I feel the negative effects of this current budget. So I suggest we get in touch with any other legislators that have ideas. I know that was mentioned at WASB that I think it's Brett Davis had put something out. It's easy to say things when you're not in power, but it's obviously easy to not say things when you're in power. So I would like to hear how everyone's going to respond to this. And I would also say that this does come down to local governance, and that was something that both small and large districts were talking about, was not so much the bills, although the speed at which they were passed made everyone panic, especially the Milwaukee School Board. And they were feeling like they were kind of hung out to dry. And that was very, you know, difficult to see, because I think that they're working on governance like everyone else is. They go to all the meetings just like everyone else does.
Yeah, just one last thing. I do think it's a good idea if we could invite someone like Representative Davis, because he has a lot of ideas. I don't know, one of his recent ones was if using test scores does come up for teacher pay, and the formula for teacher pay, that school districts would need to match funds, state funds, with our $1 million of our own money toward putting together a program to do that. And I really think that I really think that he needs to have some face-to-face talks with boards such as ours. That really, there's no way we have $1 million to do something like that.
I would suggest we look at putting things on a future agenda that deal with pending legislation, and then invite your guest speakers or have it as a special agenda, as a special meeting.
I would like to respond to the two marks first and do our local people and then branch out. There's no reason why we can't do it, can't do both. But I want to hear from our local reps about, especially since they're in seats of power in the legislature, of what's going on, what's happening to us. I want to focus on us. You know.
Well, I defer to have a later conversation about this. I thought it was... there was many of us in the crowd that thought it was pretty ineffective. Depending on how that conversation goes, a lot of it was many minutes spent listening to someone talk and not really answer questions of what happened. Mm. So it wasn't, now maybe they'll have a different take and be willing to. I think that the consensus of a lot of board members there that have served for a long time is that it's helpful to have some back and forth because people then take stands, and that's an issue right now, is that the state legislators, at least the ones that were there, were expressing that their hands were tied and there was nothing they could do, and that's the position we're in. And at the same time, they're willing to change as many rules as possible, as quickly as possible, to where we lose local control. And I think those are two things that are very disconcerting.
Ms. Mathiak?
I guess, you know, what I'm thinking is that and this absolutely relates to the legislative report, because it's sort of, you know, I was out of town for the weekend. I wasn't checking my email. I got back and go, oh, my God. And I, having had that happen so soon after I had the pleasure of waiting in line on Wednesday with Sandy Pope Roberts right after the Cap Times article came out, as all of her friends in the legislature came to say how sad they were about the Cap Times article. It does occur to me that even the things that were tabled or are not going anywhere, the things that have been passed, all have an impact, and we need to convey that to our delegation. We need to say to them what this does and does not mean, and to find out if they voted for some of this, why they thought it was a good idea, and if they voted against it, why they took that position. But there has to be some better bridging between this group as an elected body with one of the largest school districts in the state, and that group as a group of elected legislators who are in unique positions of power right now. There's a real disconnect between what we see in, you know, at the grassroots local level and what they are supporting and proposing. And I could see where some of these things would sound really good, but that's part of where this whole, could Mr. Quick or you or somebody keep us informed, because just that bill that was put forward on expanding the powers of the superintendent of public instruction, that's something I wanted to respond to. That really was a rather frightening set of proposals, in my personal opinion, so.
Thank you.